Let's get dangerous. Darkwing Duck this thing. Well, I know we want to watch the Rams game.
Oh my
So.
goodness, I know, but I figure second half, that's fine. And who knows, by the time this ends, either I won't want to watch or I
There won't
won't
be
need to.
much to watch. Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of, what are we doing 2 weeks from now? It's
Oh,
going to be
because the
this.
soup. This has happened before, hasn't
This
it?
has happened before. Somehow our podcast lines up with the Super Bowl every year. So maybe we could do the
I'm
Monday
off
or the
on
Tuesday.
Mondays. I could
Okay.
do Mondays or
Ooh, that face is.
Mondays.
Well, more than likely we'll be doing it on a Monday then. We'll figure that all out, and hopefully the Rams will be participating.
Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton,
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights. And welcome.
Welcome, everybody. I am Rob.
I am Colton. Whoa. Hi.
Yeah, that's right. I
Hey,
hope
what's
everybody.
that?
Hey, they're a little professional. Welcome to episode 76. We got 24 more episodes till we do Creed.
Who are you?
Today we are going to be discussing
What?
Neil Young's Old Man from the 1972 classic Harvest.
Okay, hold up for a sec. For people who are
But
listening.
in the first segment, we'll be go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, I and first of all, good job. Like, this is
Thank
me
you.
saying good job.
I know, which is great. Yeah, it is professional.
As is usually what this podcast does, we take like small steps forward and then one of us drags the other one back to the
It's true.
muck. It's like, how dare you do a better job of hosting this show? This has never happened before.
It's
We
true. Thanks
are.
for bringing me back to the mud,
I
Colton.
didn't like the momentum. I wanted to halt us back to zero.
I got like shiny white shoes. I'm like clean right now, and
You,
you
yeah,
just drag me into the.
you know what number episode we are. We said what artists we're looking at right away. I don't know who you are, man. You used to be cool.
And by the way, in the first segment, everybody, we're going to be discussing the new song from Arctic Monkeys, Opening Night.
You know what? New leaf. I like this.
Bass
That's what we're
blown,
gonna
take
do.
us away.
Well,
You look
buddy,
good, Colton.
you look good.
Thanks,
I
man.
need a shave.
I don't know. Your beard is majestic. I've said that before, so.
It is itchy, is the
I
word I
believe
would
that.
use. It's hard, man. Hard times. I am staring down at a precipice that could potentially be. I won't say the dissolution of my marriage because that's obviously insane. But
Sure.
as we, well, not quite as we speak, we're about half hour away from my wife's chosen football team,
That's right. We're getting
Seahawks.
coming up on that NFC championship.
Yep, and my LA Rams playing each
Are.
other. And are you right? Are we
Yeah,
have a
I mean, I got it in the background. I got
we're
my.
rocking the swagger a
Yeah,
little
we're
bit.
both wearing Dodgers caps, but whatever.
I was not that I wasn't allowed to wear a Rams hat. I do have my Rams Super Bowl championship hat.
Yes.
I would have worn it, except, well,
What Colton's alluding to
to the
is
poor
that
taste.
his wife is a Seahawks fan.
And this is
And
dangerous.
clearly that's a rival of the Rams.
See what's going on now. You're like explaining things to the audience. You're being very responsible. I'm worried. Were you? Did something happen?
You know, plenty of things have happened. It's the new year. I've said it before. We're trying some things out here, trying to be a little more direct. I like that you're
Have a
trying to damage
theory.
it.
I will though, and I like it. And going forward, yes, more of this,
We'll see.
more of this. But I have a theory as to why. I don't want to say it on air, but
Okay.
we'll get there. Okay.
We may say
Well,
it on air at some point. It
we're
could have been
likely
it could have been in the
yeah,
outtake
we're not that professional.
already.
So yeah, man, we're back to our, now I feel like I gotta catch up. We're back to our, I do we even have a name for the segment yet?
You know, I was trying to think of like new something. It's got to have new in there. Like something new.
I got a good idea. How about this? Watch this. Hey, listeners, email us at
Hey.
know.your.WRITES.podcast@gmail.com. What do we call the first part of the episode where we bring up new songs.
Yeah, which we will only be doing every other weekend.
We like to keep
every other episode, I should say.
We like to keep it nice and keep everybody on their toes.
That's right. Anytime we're doing a song spotlight, there will also be in the first segment a newer song. And so far, the last two episodes that we've done this, these are like brand spanking new.
Hey, we're doing it, man. And I don't know. I hope that lasts. It's been lucky. I actually panicked. This is my time to choose. And I was close to just picking a song that I was listening to.
I know. I was really afraid of that. That's why I was trying to get a hold of you the other night. And then I saw you. You had actually sent me an email. And I was like, okay, good. It's a new song. I don't want it to be just any song.
We'll see how this goes, but I thought it would be nice because we have done the Arctic Monkeys. They are, as of now, our only two episode artists like that we've
our
done.
Our 1 month showcase.
We did. And I think that was really on my end because you had chosen the first couple albums. Mm-hmm. And I really like talking about those because I think they're one of those bands. It's funny. Now we're talking about like more contemporary rock bands. I keep thinking of Geese as an answer to this. Like,
welcome back, Geese.
Welcome back, everybody. Yeah. They were Arctic Monkeys were that band I remember for a while. They're like the saviors of rock and roll, quote unquote.
Okay. Yeah.
And I remember already thinking I liked the second half of their career more just from like the anecdotal little glimpses I'd gotten, which is why I wanted to do the second half. And it's going to escape me. The name of the album that was both of our favorites in that second half.
That's a good question. Hold, please.
Hold, please.
Because you're talking about the one that takes place at the casino, right?
Yes. And in fact, I think that we're very close to the name. So the album I really loved from that second half was Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino.
There we go.
With still, I think one of the better songs we've covered on this podcast, just in total, 4 stars out of 5. Like, what a good effing song, man.
It is a very good tune.
And I also really like The Car. I thought that was a cool album. And I was interested. I don't even know if this is from a new album necessarily. It sounds like it's like a charity release that potentially could be a new record. Opening night.
And who is it that they're...
The let me...
Here we go. This is the real side of Know Your Rights.
No, I think War Child is a... it's some kind of a charity. And I think I believe... And this is from my very quick research I've done, that it's mainly about children living in war-torn areas. And also, I think child soldiers could be a part of that.
Okay.
That's always cool. And I do feel like the song is touching on that. Did you get that vibe?
I definitely get that vibe. From the start, it's just like, okay, so he's talking about cell phones. Yeah.
I actually want to play a game with you, which is... And I think overall, I like the song. On a couple of listens over, I don't think if this is like a direction they're trending towards, it's not one that I'm super jazzed about. Like,
yeah.
Like versus like the last two records I've heard that I think were really interesting. You said that there was a lyric in this song that really bothered you. And I want to guess what it is. And I think I know because it's the lyric that bothered me the most.
I'm hoping we're on the same page.
Not a lyrically solid song, I would say.
It's another one of those where I'm like, I can get behind the message, but the cleverness behind how you're piecing together these stanzas is just not, it's not what, I think it's really his own doing because he has had such great lyrics.
I agree with that. I think it's in the second verse.
You're on to something.
10 years later, it's been
you're
a decade.
You're on to something, man. Honestly, I felt like it could have been saved if maybe he did a sigh in between, almost like adding to her, like, it's been a decade.
Right. Well, yeah, because I think that's the intent, right? Whew, it's been a year. All right. Yeah. But I don't like the affect he uses that it's been a decade, where it's almost like he's explaining what 10 years is.
It's really that the redundancy of it all that I'm like, come on, man. I'm hoping that they all got a little bit of a chuckle in the studio.
See, I don't know. And in a very small digression, it reminds me of the opening to Lose Yourself with Eminem. And what, 70 something episodes. I don't know if I've talked about this before anymore, but where he's just like, that great imagery, like his palms are sweaty, mom spaghetti, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of that, he goes, he's nervous. And I'm like, yeah, no, we get that. Like, yeah, that's all you've been doing for the last couple of months. Anywho, I heard people liken this Arctic Monkeys song to, funny enough, Fleetwood Mac, which I think is in the choruses.
I could hear that. I could definitely hear that because, I mean, I love the last chorus of the song. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself because the bridge I don't particularly like. No. The bridge just feels kind of like they had the music and now we got to apply vocals to it, which that's kind of a dangerous thing. I know it can sometimes work with artists, but I don't particularly like it. I prefer you come in with kind of a vocal melody and all of this stuff and then the bridge and everything, and then we'll add music to it. As opposed to, like, we've created this big musical thing, and Default American does it all the time to me, so I may be a little aggressive towards this idea. But it just sounds like they had to put melody over it, melody and lyrics over it.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't have that good of a flow to me.
Which I've also done, and weirdly, I've done it to myself. Like, I could have...
Yeah, that's true. That's
the thing about being solo is I could stop myself, but I also feel like I put myself in that position where this last record and other ones I've been doing, I want bridges. Like I was inspired when we talk about like Jimmy World. And I was like, you know what? Bridges are, they are worth returning to. And the thing that Jimmy World does that's so great is like Jim Adkins will make the bridge like an important lyrical component of the song. Like it helps like create that, like it makes the final chorus feel like a culmination.
Yeah. It's creating that tension. And then the resolve coming back to the chorus. And they're, I mean, Jimmy World is just, they're masters of the bridge.
And I mean, go listen to Kill Me, everyone, off of Futures. And that bridge is exactly, musically, lyrically, everything. And I mean, it's hard. It's not like it's easy. But I also.
Well, the best ones make it look or sound easy.
That's true. Yeah, this one sounded hard.
Well, I'm going to do you one better. Everybody, just go and listen to Futures.
Yeah, just go.
Yeah, that whole album, I'd love that album.
Stop this episode. No. No.
Wait until the end.
I don't have much more about this, but I did want to ask you the opening of this song, where it's the, I mean, there's like a little soundscape, right? And then there's the guitar that kicks in. I had, and it was this last listen through. I didn't catch it the first couple of times. There is one band I had in my brain. I was like, this could have come from this band and this record. Like and it's not one you would associate with Arctic Monkeys. It's a record we both are on record as loving.
Okay.
Like probably like top record. I think it might be more the effect they're running the guitar through. It's also the guitar work, I guess.
Yeah. I like the guitar sound because it almost has this like papery banjo-y type of.
Yeah.
Like not banjo, but that's just the closest thing that could pop into my head for the tone of it.
That could be on Perfect Circle's 13th Step.
Okay.
The guitar specifically.
Yeah. I mean, I like that. But what I was going to say originally is the last chorus, I really like the backup vocals, how they come in first and then it eases into the chorus again and then it has the lyric right before and then goes to that lyric. Yeah. I really like that approach. Not that it's completely groundbreaking, but most of the time it's going to be the main vocalist and then the call and response.
Yeah.
So I like how they switch that up. It gives a really cool vibe. It makes the chorus almost worth it because I think I listened to the song like 4 or 5 times. And then on the next couple of listens, that's when I was like, okay, I appreciate this chorus that much more.
I think it's way different than what I've heard. Like, I would say the last two Arctic Monkeys have been in my brain, and I think we talked about this with the Tranquility record, like David Bowie core, like tons of Bowie, tons of, I mean, other things. It's also like his singing, right? The new kind of vocal performance he takes on. I got the Fleetwood Mac of this, and I think in total, I mean, you never know if it's like a one-off single or whatever, but it has a kind of underwhelming, like just the energy of it. Like, it feels very like, even when the chorus kicks in and it has that kind of like the drum beat in that where it's like, da, 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 da. Like that should be driving, right? And that should be like kind of, it feels kind of quicker. And these guys can rip.
They can.
They can, but
Or they can't anymore. Who knows? This might just be a sign of aging, to where it's like, we just want to make chill, chill vibey songs. And he's got one of those voices to where he kind of speaks in, at this, you know, like at the kind of lower register. So I think he's probably going like, man, it's kind of difficult sometimes for me to get up there nowadays.
But see, who are you talking to? I love old man Arctic Monkeys. That's my preference.
Yeah, I'm still the good old days, it, Arctic Monkeys.
It felt like a weird marriage of the two, is I guess what my takeaway was.
I can get that. It feels a lot more of the old man.
We will.
Speaking of. You know what's sad? Anytime, I'm amazed that I pulled it off. If I were to say Heart of Gold by Neil Young. But if I say Sweet Caroline, it's by Neil Young. And I'm just like, damn it, dude, it's Neil Diamond. I mix up the Diamond and Young every time. Very similar artists.
Very, I mean, yes, actually.
There's similarities.
You know, I want to say, I don't want to speak for you. One half of this podcast is a highly pro Neil Diamond podcast.
And you know what? The other half is a mid pro Neil Diamond.
I have like weird memories of me reading things that I'm like, this has to be true, right? I feel like I read this. And then other times I think, did I make this up? I really probably could have. But I do remember reading a history of Neil Diamond where at a party he was attending, Bob Dylan came up to him and was like super excited to meet him and effusive. And he was saying something like, you're doing it for all of us, man. Like you're the real deal. And I've always thought of him in that light. He's just like a songwriter. And I think Neil Young is around that camp.
I can agree with that. I just think that their songs are different energies.
Oh, tonally, musically, stylist. Yeah, everything's different.
Yeah. I mean, you could play an acoustic and if I never heard the song, I can tell you which one's Neil Diamond, because it's going to be heavy wrist. It's going to be a lot more staccato. Neil Young is going to be a lot more like arpeggiated, little like hammer-ons. But they're both going to be playing open chords.
Diamond actually, I'm making a lot of Bowie references today. He actually reminds me without way making more a Bowie.
Okay, there we go. He's
very much so. But also, my main point was they're both named Neil, and that to me is there you go.
That's what always F's it up for me. I probably shouldn't have called it out because I was doing fine.
I think that we should probably take it to the Blamley at this point. I think we can improve on this first segment.
I don't know if there's anything else I got left to say. We'll let you know on the other side.
If you're looking for fun events, awesome music, and enjoyable podcasts, then look no further. The Basebone Entertainment family has you covered. With so many talented people in our community, it was only right that we not only bring you events, but all sorts of awesome entertainment. Follow Basebone on social media or join our Discord community to stay updated and engaged in everything. That is at Baseblown on social media and discord.gg/baseblown for our Discord. Baseblown Entertainment, bringing you more than just bass in your face.
Welcome to the Siren Songbook, a podcast where we discuss female artists, their music, their history, and the impact they've made on the music industry. Join us each month as we pick a new inspirational artist and celebrate exactly what it is that makes them so magical.
You can listen to new episodes of The Siren Songbook on Spotify every last Wednesday of the month. The Siren Songbook, a Baseball Entertainment podcast.
All right. When you're ready, you can bring us back. I threw us in. You bring us back.
I'm ready. I hope you guys are ready. Welcome back.
Welcome back, everyone. We are the new lean, mean machine. That's right. Know your rights.
Very well oiled.
I'm Colton. That's Rob. I'm now I feel like I'm like, I want to match.
You're trying to match the energy.
I'm just going to keep reminding people what our names are over and over again. Why not?
No, I get you. So this is Rob speaking. Colton, what's your history with Neil Young?
As my name is Colton, I will respond.
Good.
Here's the thing. You chose this and I was happy. And I feel like you even kind of mentioned it was partly thinking of me, which I really appreciate.
Yes.
I love you, man.
It was a lot of thinking of you.
Neil Young has been not in my life when I was younger. Like I've talked in this podcast about like kind of early Colton and like Petty. Tom Petty was a big part of that, right? He was probably of like the Traveling Wilbury core, kind of songwriters you'd know of. He was my guy for a long time. Neil Young, weirdly enough, Do you remember Timothy O'Connor? I don't know if you would. He was this is like, and for the record, I mean, don't
you
even
go. I'll see if I recognize the face.
He is a friend of actually our former guitarist that was in My Friend Sam.
So he's not a famous person.
Okay. Yeah, I when you went for the phone, I was like, I'm gonna help you out here, buddy. Not gonna find him out there.
All right.
But I remember being at their house a lot because I was actually working on a senior project there. I was recording my own record. And
is that do blind dogs, or is it?
I mean, I honestly, it's such a bad title. I don't even feel like I want to put it out there.
Please say
I don't want to put it out there because I don't want people to remember what it was. But
like, do deaf dogs hear love? Anything. Some crap like that.
It was bad. But anywho, the
the songs were
good. His mother actually was flustered. Really a big fan of Neil Young. Yep. And was playing, I think, Neil Damage Done and something else. I can't remember. Song. A few others. And then Old Man was one of those. And I, again, aware of him, of his existence, but that was one of those, like, you know, the clouds open up and I'm like, oh, shoot, Neil Young, man. And Old Man was one of those. It was like all the usuals, Heart of Gold, Neil Damage Done. But
so it kind of sounds like you have a similar thing. I was a Neil Young fan younger. Mm-hmm. I think actually probably one of the first times that I ever actually put the needle on wax is Harvest. Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't know what it is. Just I saw the album cover, you know, that like light brown, really subdued. I think of all the iconic album covers you can run into. For some reason, this just stood out to me in my parents' collection, and I just threw it on and fell in love. And you nailed it. Needle and the Damage Done. Even though that's at the end of the record, that was one of the first ones that I was like, oh my God, this is an unbelievable song.
And I really should say that, like, there are two Neil Young records I am familiar with. One is Harvest, and the other is Prairie Wind.
Okay.
And I know there are others, and like, I have dabbled in others, but I am not a Neil Young head to where I'm like, oh yeah, the 50s record he put out to piss off the label. Like, I know that exists. Again, I admire the heck out of him. I think, funny enough, I mentioned it in the last episode when you brought up we were doing this song. The concert movie he did, Heart of Gold.
Yeah, Heart of Gold. Is
still, to me, like, primo, like, one of the best just, like, concert films I've seen personally. Just because I just love the setup. I love all the players he has. It's just really cool.
Yeah, and he does such a great job of introducing each song with like a little short story. It's a very cool experience. He definitely is one of the examples set for every singer songwriter to where it's like you got to give a little story, a little something before the song, which I think some people view as kind of cliche and dull. I still kind of like it.
Well, there's different ways of doing that, right? There are like the people who do it in a way where you're like, oh, just don't say anything. Like, there's nothing. Mm-hmm. This doesn't mean anything. And honestly, I'm saying it very self-reflexively. I mean, I never knew what to say. I'll go ahead and say neither of us know what to say.
You can speak on my behalf on this one. even if I tried, I guarantee my bandmate would just start playing the guitar right as I would start going, like, so I wrote this song. All of a sudden, I would just hear the clang on the guitar. Like, no, you're not doing that, buddy.
I never watched VH1 Storytellers. I remember appreciating the idea of the show, mm-hmm. but I think the one I watched was Meatloaf. And I remember, and it was like one of his bet, like took the words right out of my mouth. And I mean, he didn't write that song, right? Jim Steinman wrote all of his songs, but I remember him talking about it and the whole thing. He was like, and then I was just like, he took the words right out of my mouth. So anyway, that's why this song is called. And I know it probably wasn't that exactly, but I was like, okay, dude.
There's a little bit of the 10 years later, a decade.
It's been a decade, man. 10 years. Are you kidding me?
I think I only saw the Matchbox 21. And as I was watching, I was like, I don't know if you guys are quite this type of act to where you have to give me the story behind the song.
It's probably not. But this is where, if you're asking me also like what my history is with Neil Young, I think musically, like, this is like the time where I'm coming out of high school into college and I'm like actually starting to write. Like, I would say take more seriously what I would sound like as a songwriter. And
I get you, kind of finding yourself.
Yeah, and I mean that's a perpetual process, but
for anybody who's a songwriter, it should be.
I think
it's a journey, not a destination. I hate the destination bullshit.
But that record I was working on in high school, like when I listened, and I have some of those songs I still have available. It's all like emo, early 2000s emo coded, like Dashboard, but kind of not gotcha. Dashboard. Yeah. Like yeah, yeah. It was that. And also like weirdly Coheed, like, all the stuff that we were listening to and like yes. kind of putting through our own filters to make My Friend Sam stuff, our band that we were.
Happened.
Now I feel like it's like a whole audience. I got to explain, but I think Neil Young, Tom Petty, and there are probably others, but those two were probably the most central. Like, I'm like, it's my dad's music, right? Mm-hmm. And it's music that I can, like, that I like. It hits a frequency that is so in my pocket.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you say that, because I think I may have said this before on the pod, but I, as a kid, would always mix up Neil Young and obviously Neil Diamond, but not sonically, but I would mix up Neil Young and Tom Petty. Mm-hmm. There was something so similar to me in their voices. And I get it that they're actually very distinct, but there's some that they both kind of,
It's the warble. It's the, yeah. It's very much, I always find there's like a Bob Dylan where it's like the croak, right?
That's
its own thing. And they are somewhere between that and like Paul McCartney for me. Like there's like a,
I get you.
Where it's like singing to like songwriter, warble esque, whatever. They're mid spectrum, but it's weird you say that. They're similar, huh?
Yeah. But I guess they're kind of, their coolness puts it across. There's just like such a casual, cool calmness to them.
And that comes across in the lyrics too, where we're about to talk about Old Man, but just as a general vibe of Neil Young, and I think this song is a great representative of that. The lyrics are both, they're not, how do I put it? They're just not trying, mm-hmm. and yet they are. Like, there is a easiness to the way they're coming out. And some of it's in the rhyme structure, right? Where he's not trying to be as, and he's not, just period, as artful a rhymer as, say, a Dylan, right?
Or, there you go.
In that way, I think he is close to Tom Petty. But they're also, I think it's in like the folksy kind of connection that he makes between these really obvious rhymes. Like mm-hmm. it works. And I think like you said, it's a basic overall approach that he has to the music. And to me, it's also in the arrangement. The arrangement to this song is so good.
Christine, it's very good. Yeah. I mean, we might as well kind of kick it off, right?
I know you're ready for this anyway. I'm not gonna shock you. I know it's a D, but we slide the D, right?
Yes, we do.
So what is that called technically?
And I fudged up because I meant to have this in the chamber.
And I don't even think it's a regular D. It's not like a D major. Like, I think it's just the top two.
I don't know what the damn chord is called, everybody, but I know that it's the, you're playing the open D string, and then on the G string, you're playing the fifth fret.
Hammering on, I think on the fourth fret. Whatever. It's one of those, like, that whole sequence is so easy, and like the effect of it though is so perfect.
I love how it's again the coolness. All he says is, "Old man, take a look at my life. I'm a lot like you were." Mm-hmm. Then he just repeats it again.
And it's the perfect, it's the bookend, right? Because that is it. If you've heard that song maybe hundreds of times in your life, and I actually challenge people to, like, just in your head think about how many times that part comes in, and what it's twice, right?
It's twice.
Beginning and end, but it feels like it's throughout the song. That's the crazy part of the song, is it's
for sure
so simple, but that whole part, it's the prologue, right? And it kind of hovers over everything else, where you could pay me money and I would almost guess after every chorus it goes back to that, and it doesn't.
And it creates like this urgency without feeling urgent, but it just, like, it immediately conveys what the song's going to be about, like, to where you can just tell there's this, it's almost like yearning to get wisdom from this old man.
And it's very, in my head, that whole part is like the cinematic equivalent to whenever characters, or probably more like TV than film, but hey, mm-hmm. remember when it's like, there is that kind of we're getting taken out of some kind of reality into.
Yeah. All of a sudden the screen gets a little fuzzy.
Yeah. Like hyper meditative state. And it's the music, right? It's, and like you said, it's like the repetition of that whole mm-hmm. idea. Can I just do a shout out for when he goes back to the D and that little hammer, if you're for anyone who doesn't know these chords or what we're talking about, it's the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, that like little, it's mm-hmm. all, it's just a little hammer with your pinky, right? You're like taking your finger off the D string.
Yeah.
It's one of the most like common, it's the first like little flourish I remember learning playing guitar.
I still do it so much.
Everybody does. It's just, it's so fun.
It's right.
it's right.
It's right. Just do it. Like, don't question it. Go with it.
Not a lot of those other chords, I feel like. I mean, they have them, but I always liked that one. And there's a, like, because other than that, it feels almost kind of like a minor, like, it feels like a almost kind of dour thing.
Mm-hmm.
It bridges it into, I don't know, like, there's, it's eventually going to become this, like, kind of fun, upbeat number, and musically at least.
Uh-huh.
What I would say is, over, across the board, and this opening does a good job of setting it, tonally complex.
Yeah.
Like, well, it is multiple shades.
It's very interesting because I feel like the busiest instrument to start it off is the acoustic, just because mm-hmm. he's doing a lot of those hammer-ons, those pull-offs. It was like, and it's all the stuff that you would usually do with these chords, but I mean, like, when it hits the drums and the bass kicking in, that is butter.
And no crash.
No crash, no cymbal. It is mm-hmm. just kick, kick, snare, kick, kick, snare. And the bass is just doom, doom. You know, and then with a little fill right at the end. And I'm like, that's perfect.
This is a do what I say, not as I do situation.
Exactly,
of like I sometimes, like when I was playing shows and you'd see like drummers with like 8 crash cymbals like blade uh-huh. across. Sure, well, and sure. like 10 rack toms or whatever, but yeah. I just like, oh, we're in for it. This is going to be bad. All that crash. But it's, I mean, the thing is, and there is crash in this song, right? Like he's doing it on the chorus.
Eventually. But that's the beauty of it. It's the waiting. It's the waiting, putting it in when it needs to be put in.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's my second favorite like introduction to instruments in this song. The first one is like perfect to me, but
it's perfect because. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the bass, the kick and the bass coming in at the same time, and that doom, doom, one, and, oh, it's, like you said, butter and so smart.
Yeah, it's so smart, and it's the fact that, like, just that those two are kind of holding down the simple edge, and the guitar is kind of, that's a loose right hand. It's really bouncing around the strings. It's nice having that little, that duality between the three, I guess, but it's like the bass and drums are keeping it simple. The guitar is kind of adding a little bit more of a, not swirling, but just there's more activity that kind of feels like it's around this center. Do do cut do do do, like it adds such a great feel, and like you can't help but kind of like
And it changes the whole rhythmic quality of the song, right? Because mm-hmm. before that, it's very floaty. Like, it's mm-hmm. very like...
And now we're hitting more ordinary chords. We're hitting the, what is it, D. I play an F major 7, but it could be just an F major. And then G, I think it is. But it's like, now we're hitting chords. We're hitting more straightforward chords, but it just... the vibe is right there.
It's
so good.
Yeah. In the I guess I'll wait for the little bridge part, but I know we've talked about the story he tells that kind of enters into this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And it is one of those, like, it's just short enough, and it's just that little like folksy wit of Neil Young that mm-hmm. I'm okay with it. But it's also great because it is such a slight song, and what I'm talking about is like he's already been successful. I think he's trying to buy a ranch in like Northern California,
I think he already had at this point.
And the guy was showing
for $350,000, and there were two caretakers for this ranch that I can't remember the name of.
Wild now, because $350,000 isn't even going to buy you like a 2-bedroom house in Silicon Valley. But you know, we digress.
We digress. There we go. Yeah.
But so the caretakers, this older man who's like, how does a fellow your age get to buy in a place like this? And he's like, Neil Young, I think, is 24 at the time. Yeah. And he goes, well, you know, just lucky. Just lucky.
If for anybody who wants to see this, I recommend checking out Heart of Gold.
I don't know if we're doing it justice. And the old man just goes, well, ain't that just the darndest thing?
Like, ain't that just the darndest thing?
I'll go one step further. It's not a story. Like, that's not a story.
It's not. Like,
hey, Neil, buddy.
It's funny that I was earlier when I was saying, like, he does a great job of telling a story before. That's where the eye roll was coming from Colton. Like, no, I don't know, man.
No, but also I love it. Like, I'm like, yeah man, that's cool. Because I mean, because he is just cool and it works.
He's just cool. His delivery to it, like, he said, you know, ain't that the darndest thing? that's my Neil Young, everybody.
But I set that all up because the song itself, it's that perfect kind of threading the needle of so clear, right? Oh my God, so clear in its subject matter. Right. And to me, that can be the death knell of a song, is if it basically shows its trick in the first like two lines, more or less, like, okay, I get it. And there's nothing left to do with it. There's nothing that kind of expands the concept or takes it different places, no room for growth. But I think it's both in how tastefully the song is, like direct the song is, like it's not trying to do too much, but it's also, it's the whole idea of age anyway. It's so ambivalent, right? Like there's the obvious translation of like, yeah, I'm young. I don't know what's going on. Right. Like youth is like, I am fully aware of how naive I am and might feel like as a young person, but it's also like age is scary. There's a weird ambivalence to it.
At least what I take from it is it's like, it's this like, please, old man, instill some wisdom on me, because it's kind of rare for people to really consider their futures that heavily. And that's what like the song kind of fills, like right when he hits the, I mean, I've heard this lyric every birthday, every year I hear the 24 and it's so much more, but it's going to be my birth year. My mom does it every year. She has this weird medley for it, but like, I just had to get that out there. My sister will understand. A very avid listener.
Hey, Mom.
Hey. But I do like when he goes into the, like, I live alone in a paradise that makes me think of two. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, now we're giving a shout out to love. He's admiring this old man who has this relationship, and he just purchased this place. So it's like it ties in a little bit of the story. And for some reason, I just like that makes me think of two.
See, it's so funny because I actually have a very different read on that lyric. I think I want to find the darkness of this song, and not in a bad way. Like I think it's part of what I've always liked about it, is there is an emotional complexity to what's going on. I think you're right that there is some like great sage on the hill idea of it, and a little romanticizing, right? Old man rancher, seen it all, like share what you got, but. It's also like a been living in a paradise that makes me think of two. I see that as like a second paradise, like death, like the afterlife. Oh. Like I don't know. Like it's funny. I'm remembering an old professor of mine who used to do this with Robert Frost, where like every like Frost poem, she's like, there's the dark Frost, and it's almost like a dark version. Every Frost poem has a dark side that you could kind of slip into. Uh-huh. But I think there's, like I said, it's not to me the strict binary. It's also that there's a kind of exchange happening in this moment. And like, even in like trying to kind of call out to him in the chorus, it's like, hey, we're the same. And yet there is something that's kind of like, we're just not keeping us from connecting, right, in a real way.
I can see that
because of where we are in our lives.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you're right, because I don't think there's a direct message completely with this song. There's kind of a direct idea of sharing something.
It's very impressionistic, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's all complicated, but before we hit the chorus, can we just say how great that moment is? The pre-chorus?
It's the, like, I was saying that the drums and bass kicking in were my second favorite introduction to an instrument. The banjo is, like...
There's so much at work at this particular moment that I admire. Because the chord progression changes oh so subtly. It goes from playing, you know, a D major going into the, like I said, I play F major 7. Now it goes into that A minor 7. Mm-hmm. But the banjo is what makes it feel, like, different. And, like, because that chord progression, it would have been really difficult to... It's so subtle that, like, you need something to kind of accent it. And the banjo is perfect. And you know who's playing the banjo right there?
I do. Mr. James Taylor.
James Taylor. A six-string banjo, by the way. So he's cheating. He's not playing a real banjo. But it sounds like a banjo, that's for sure.
Man, it is so crisp. And like I haven't talked about it yet, but like this recording, like the Harvest recording, and like I know it's like how many remasters, right? That I've I sometimes worry about how many of these older songs have I heard the actual original track of? And how many are just that I'm like so in love with how they sound, but I'm like, would I really love them if I was listening to them in the 70s? I don't know. But
yeah, it's tough listening on Spotify and it's just like the 2009 remastered version. I'm like, stop it. Just give me the real.
Yeah. So who knows? Right. And I just, all the mixing, man, and it's the drums are so low in the mix, which like I've mentioned Met several times. There was a turn, I think somewhere around the 80s and 90s where drums got so heavy in the mix that it like everything gets dominated by them and it kind of drives me crazy. But and so when the banjo comes in, it's the clearest instrument. And you know, it's also just the sonic quality of the banjo, right? It has that cut to it.
Yeah, it'll cut right through. And it's it's this beautiful little like again with the arpeggios, but you know, like just adding like little hammer-on flares within it. Where I'm like, dude, James Taylor, way to go, man.
And I don't know who the banjo player is on the Heart of Gold concert movie, but when that guy it does like a kind of still shot of him, like when he's doing that banjo part, he just looks so cool. And he's like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. This is the best part of the song. You're welcome.
Well, and it's even more aggravating, I think, both of us being songwriters and just how difficult it is to make something so simple sound so great. The song really is rock 101, not rock, but 101 when it comes to song composition. There's not that many crazy things happening here.
No, because that is both a bridge into the chorus, but it's also literally just the chorus. Like and it's that little, it's this small little like musical interlude that like you keep the same progression, right? Yeah. But then the singing kicks in like right after. And so that little breath of air where like you're able to layer things in, it's
crucial too.
Yeah.
Because I was playing it without having listened to it just after we talked that day. And it's like, okay, we're doing Old Man. And I was like, I kind of know how this song goes. And I would keep going into the chorus without leaving that breath. And so all of a sudden, like I said, going from that D to an A minor, the A minor 7, it's too abrupt. So it's like you need that banjo part to kind of give you a moment to prepare for the chorus. And you know who is one of the background singers on the chorus besides James Taylor?
I had this. I definitely had it.
I heard her a lot growing up. My mom is a...
Linda Ronstadt?
Yep. And I've listened to a lot of Linda Ronstadt. My mom was a huge fan. I'm sure still is. But I was really surprised by that. I didn't know that those two were on it. Because like within this modern civilization or this modern record label scene, you got to get it featured. Right? Like, this is Neil Young featuring James Taylor and Linda Ronstadt.
Is James Taylor James Taylor, though? Like, I don't know enough about James Taylor. Like, this is 1972.
That's a good point. What year did Fire and Rain come out?
Let me do this.
I'm sure it came out in the 70s. Because for a second I was going to say, yeah, it's James Taylor. That's the... it's that James Taylor.
he is him. Okay, yeah. He is, because that was 1970. So
okay.
Yeah, he's JT, man. He is. Yeah.
And I know Linda Ronstadt's already established at that point. JT. The original JT. But it's just impressive that they're just like, yeah, I'll come in.
The other being it. JT Snow, by the way.
Yes
from the California Angels at that point.
Oh my God. There's your sports talk, everybody.
Oh my Lord. Yeah. So man, the chorus itself, this is okay. Like I'm literally just like, if I'm looking for anything in the song that I find the most kind of like copy paste, it's probably the chorus.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm thinking strictly the like lyric / melody. I think that's the like, and also though, but for the record, I love both of them, but I don't like, oh, my wife just whooped. That's not good.
Ah.
I'm not even going to look what it was. I know that she whooped.
No, that'll be after the
pod. I know my wife's whoops, but
I don't even want to do this anymore.
I think it's just the melody kind of it loses the melody a little bit, like that. I need someone to love me the whole way through. I don't know. It's weird.
It's the whole day through.
Yeah. Oh man. We'll see. The same. And it's even the like the last part, like one look in my eyes and you'll tell it's true.
There's a reason there's more vocals on this part. There's a reason that it's like, let's just go Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young on this.
I think that's the problem, right?
Yeah.
Like the melody doesn't feel as clear to me or as like compelling. But it is, it's more about the power of it. And so in that way, it's probably more just about how good the arrangements.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything flows perfectly fine. I mean, this is us really trying to find a flaw here.
I just didn't want Neil Young to listen to this and think I didn't have notes.
That's right.
I always have notes.
Up here for me, buddy. But I mean, and it's kind of a lazy lyric to close out the chorus. It's like one look in my eyes and you can tell that it's true. All right, but then it goes right back into that fucking really cool kind of D chord thing where I'm like, it's a beautiful flow to all this.
Yeah, and the decision to go back to that, I just think if you put like 10 different songwriters of like any skill level and like you put them in a room and you give them what you've done with the song already, or like that little opening, little segue into the verse, into that chorus, and then you tell them, okay, what next? Like, I just feel like 99 out of 100 would go back to... Like, if only because it's such an obvious, like, decision. Bridge back into the verse, right? Like, it gives you a little bit of space, and it's like that kind of small, like, motif, right? That you can sprinkle around this song to, like... That's the old man kind of motif that you've set up. And it just, the song chooses groove, and I love that.
And what we left out, the drums all of a sudden had cymbals during that chorus.
Which I had to go back and listen to again, because I was like, I already knew I wanted to talk to you about the no crash, and I was like, is there any crash? And it's just the mix that I couldn't hear, but they're there, and they're good. It's all in the right parts.
Yeah, and we're also leaving out that, I mean, I love that pedal still.
Well, and so... Is that in the chorus or in the verse?
Does it kick in during the verse? I think you're right. I think it does kick in the verse.
Because I
was gonna, hold please.
So what is that?
Yeah,
like
so it
120.
Starts with it comes. Which again, simple, like such a simple idea. Just like let's just slide up into this. Fucking perfect. It's perfect. The minimalism of this song is just so breathtaking to me. I love when people can do that.
And then when we get back into the verse, the pedal, now that the pedal still is established, it can take on the heavy load from, I mean, the acoustic's still doing what it's doing, like you said, but the pedal still, like, it's always something that you want, right? You want your second verses to feel like
a little more, a little something extra.
Yeah, like you want that feeling of dynamicism, like that there is, like it's building to something, or that there's something you're thinking through a new way to set it up. I guess there are certain traditions where that's not as important. Like, I think like hip hop and folk music, like both are a bit more okay with the repetition. That's like a part of it. The other thing that's so cool is, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, no banjo, right? The banjo drops out.
And it saves itself.
And it'll come back again. Like if you're the banjo player, you're just, okay, I'm going to hang back.
Yes. We've talked about it on plenty of different songs. It is so difficult to just sit out a verse or whatever instrument you're playing.
Well, and then your fear, right? And I say this from having to like agonize over arrangements, I guess a year ago at this point, but still, like that was the stuff that kept me up at night, was when you establish an instrument, the fear part of my brain is like, okay, then it has to stay, because it will be noticeable if it drops, and it will make the song feel like it's losing ground rather than gaining it. Like the more you add in, the more you have to kind of maintain it and find interesting ways to maintain it, or else the song will start to lose its depth. Right. Yeah.
And you kind of nailed it. The banjo drops, the pedal still is taken over to where it's like, I'll hold it down here. I'll give you all the like nice little flourishes in between vocal melody parts.
Mm-hmm. It's weird. I want to say selfishness, but I mean, it's also like, these are all players, right? But I do think that's something we've said a lot about what makes songs seem perfect, even though no song really is perfect, is when everything is moving in service of like the whole, right?
Yeah.
And also that this song's like its aims are really modest, like in that it's not like nothing is trying to do the most. Like
I've said it to plenty of bandmates before, to where I'm like, dude, if the song sounds good, even if you're doing if you're just hitting a triangle once, you're gonna look cool because you're doing something right, and it's all gonna just
You've grown into, like, neither of us had that kind of like folksy witticism when we were playing together. Like, you would look
at me. How do I add another fucking note?
That's the wisdom that comes with age. Because when we were playing together, like more like frequently, I think usually we'd look at each other before a show started and went, bail.
Let's get out of here, man.
I didn't have any of that. The only thing I remember ever saying was, we got to act like we've been here before, and that never happened.
No, it's hard to fake.
I want to give a shout out to the second verses. I like the first ones, but I really, the first stanza is good. Like, lullabies, look in your eyes, run around the same old town. Like, this is the thing where, like, what I was saying about the chorus, like where it feels like relatively just kind of like cut and paste, right? Or copy and paste in.
Yeah.
Like I was trying to establish before, this song to me is not lyrically trying hard, in that it is not trying to like artfully sequence like these really kind of slant rhymes and things. It's not trying to make it feel like conversational. And yet the kind of fluidity that the rhymes come in, like lullabies, look in your eyes, right? Where it's like the rhymes in the same line.
Yeah.
And then that second line too, run around the same old town, like that should make my eyes roll out of my head. But I think it's in the, it's sonically, right? Like there's times where like the lines themselves don't have a huge profound power, but it's in the, like the way that it sounds. Like I always say that, like these sounds of rhymes matter.
The sound of a word matters. You know, like you can, if with something like this, like if you were to say lullabies gaze in my eyes, the sound of the word just isn't right.
That alliteration, like, is key.
Mm-hmm. But who's talking here? You know what I mean? Like, because I could see it from the old man's perspective. I could see it from the young man's perspective. I like to think that it's the old man.
Yeah, the doesn't mean that much to me, to mean that much to you is very like,
yeah.
I'm not trying to be your guy.
Yeah.
I'm not
I got bigger things, man.
You weirdo.
Because I mean, the lullabies look in your eyes, that comes right after take one look in my eyes and you can tell that it's true. And then he follows it with lullabies look in your eyes. I'm bored. Like fucking, it doesn't mean that much to me.
Like, the second half of that, that's the thing, is there's a kind of biting wit to this that you're not expecting, where it's like it would be easy for this to be like a really like gooey romanticization of just age, right? Like, You're so wise. And that stuff always bugs me anyways, because like it's just not the way life works. And like the people I've known in my life that have, you know, gotten to like very old ages, like 90s and above, the thing I hear the most often is they're like, you don't feel old. Like you don't think you look old. You always look like yourself and you feel like yourself. Everyone just keeps telling you that you're old.
As somebody who works at a retirement community, I can say almost everyone is just like, I feel like I'm 30, 20. Like up here, I'm a kid still.
That's right. Like,
and I'm like, stop telling me that. I want to feel like I'm going to grow up.
I know. I would like to know when that happens. And I guess that's the point. Yeah. That is. But
I do really like that, though. I do like that he does kind of, for as much as I was saying it's a bland lyric to end that chorus, I like that he kind of responds to that last line of the chorus to start the second verse.
It has continuity, right? Yeah. And I guess that's where Neil Young, I've never like really put him up there of like great lyricists, like is, and for kind of the reasons we're talking about, right? Like it is like much like a lot of the instruments in this song, the lyrics are also not trying to do much. Like they are like at really everything's almost at one frequency. They're all there, but there is a, like we can do this, we do it line to line and you can pull out some really cool meaning, right? In context from line to line. But there's also just the fact that the lyrics function on a whole, that they're all trying to move towards this bigger emotional space. Like we know we're talking about age. We know we're talking about like meditations on time, right? And like fears of the future, but also fears of the past.
So you don't want to talk about the biblical stylings of I've been first and last?
I'm first alpha and omega.
Well, no, poor and rich.
Oh, the no,
because those in heaven will be like the rich will be last, the poor will be first. I'm pretty sure that is what he's referencing.
I would imagine. I mean, that's the thing is, I do think line to line, there's like rich stuff. I guess to me, what he excels poor at stuff. Is, you're looking
hey,
cheap.
Hey.
He excels at like letting a song kind of set up this like kind of mini world that all these ideas kind of swirl in. And it's not so much that every line, to me at least, right? This is very much like my experience when I engage with him. It's not that every line is trying to teach you something new. It's that they're all trying to kind of think through this kind of larger theme and idea. And so like, cause you know, otherwise that second verse to me could be like, okay, what are we doing that's different? It could be, like you said, it's the old band, right? We're flipping the POV. Yeah. But I also just think it's interesting that it's all different takes on this question of age and like, does age make you better, right? Or wiser or different? And I don't know, like it's weird to me that it's both super simplistic and yet I could get lost in these lyrics, like just roll around.
It's the cool loose end to it all, because there's no real closure. There's no finality to the lyrics at all in this song.
And even that last comes up twice. I mean, that's the cardinal sin, right? I've been first
it
and
is.
Last.
Yes.
Time goes past and then, but I'm all alone at last. But it's the fact that the two are so different, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the usage of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rolling home to you.
And then that's the last of new lyrics on the song.
That's right.
Yeah. Then we go right back into the fantastic James Taylor banjo part. Let's hit the chorus again, and then let's go out in fucking Coda style.
It does have that cool, like, folky quality. Like, I do this a lot. I know that an artist we just covered, not just recently, Connor Oberst does this. You've done this, I know too. And it's not always in the choruses, it can be in the verses where there is a kind of like repeating structure that your verses can take. And it's like mainly lyrically, right? Where the end of the first verse, right? That second stanza is, and we're talking about the coin that doesn't get tossed and then it's rolling home to you.
Yes.
And then it's the same thing, right? The end of the second verse. And it's, that's very folk, right? Folk is, folk music is all about the round and like getting to that repetition, but getting to it in a different way. And like, this is not folk, right? This is, I mean, what would you, I hate this conversation on like a philosophical
It crossed my mind as well. What genre is this?
Yeah, I know.
I'm going folk. I'm gonna lean more folk, but then folk also has this connotation that it's acoustic and it's gonna be a lot more words.
Lyrically, it doesn't feel folk. Other than that, that's the one element that feels the most kind of like within the folk tradition that I am aware of, that I've kind of looked at myself. But everything else, like there's some kind of clear, like obviously country, right? And
yeah.
And rock. I mean, at a base level, a lot of the stuff usually gets put under the singer-songwriter tab, which I find interesting as its own genre.
What's everything else? I'm like, I feel like there are hip hop artists who are just like, I'm a songwriter. But you brought up a really good point. I do like the dynamics between the second half of the first verse and the second half of the second verse, because one is like wanting to come home to somebody, and then on the second one is acknowledging I'm coming home to nobody, which it's just a cool thought. It's a cool like thing to put in, but I don't know if I apply that much depth to it.
It's to me, it's less depth than it is like there's to me at least a pleasing. It's the same thing comes from like a really well done rhyme where there is a kind of like dopamine hit when like you get that sense of structure right within a verse, like a verse specifically where it feels it can make the stanzas and the verses feel more linked than they might be, but it's because you're signaling that they are still part of something, right? Like the best example I could think of that I've done is in that 3/12/24, the last song on the record I just did, where
Cockatree.
And those verses I did the exact same thing, right? And I mean I do it in a lot of places. It's funny, I was just I've been singing Baker a lot, like when I'm doing the dishes.
Good song.
Where it's like that's the same thing where I'm like, well, I'm not much of a blank and even less of a blank, right? And that's like in the second half of each verse that I do, and like the last kind of verse that I do, it's always kind of commenting on whatever I just set up before. But it's so like the song is less about an idea and more about a thought process. And I think that's the thing that's interesting about Old Man. It's less to me about an idea about age. It's more about like an approach to thinking about it in the first place.
I really like that. Yeah, that's very well said. It really, this song strikes me as like he wrote it in almost the same length of time as the length of this song.
It seems like it came out in one.
Yeah,
I agree. Like in one thing, I would be fascinated to know if, like, you know, Dylan used to write like 20 verses and choose three.
To where it's like I can't imagine him like. Like what I said with the lullabies, look in your eyes, where he's like, should I say gay? Should I say look? I don't know. Like, there's no way that happened with this song, right?
It doesn't.
Everything
strike me,
just feels like it just poured out of it. I've heard songwriters. I've felt this way towards like sometimes it feels like the song found me way more than I found the song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just how this song feels. Everything is just so unassuming. It's here. It's right in this spot that it's supposed to be at.
And at least based on the story, which I'd like to believe that's what it comes from. I also know that songwriters lie about where stories come from.
You brought up Bob Dylan.
And also me.
I wasn't going to put that on you.
No, because I'm like, I don't want you to really know where that came from.
Sure.
We're basically at the end here, and I have a question, which is, how would you end the song? Because we have options, right?
Yes,
we have do. The options we have are one with the chorus.
Yep. Slow fade out if it was the chorus. All right, we'll repeat it and just we'll fade it out.
And honestly, in a way, I see that working really nicely. We're like, we've like, that's the end. It's on and repeat. But the second option is we could go back into like the verse immediately, much like we did after the first chorus, right? Where we're back into the verse and we end with that kind of instrumental. Or we have what they do. Actually, no, be honest, we have four, because the third option is end with the beginning, which, you know, it goes back to the old man, that D. But you could end there or do what the actual end is, which you do that. And then you actually transition back into the verse and end with the verse.
I kind of dance around this, too, because the song ends. I don't want to say abruptly, but there is a little bit of longing for more. It's a very short song.
It is.
You know, but when it ends, I think it fits into the kind of the mental place that everybody's in, where it's like, let's not overthink it. You know, there's almost this like, there might have just been, they played it. I don't know what the studio setup was or how they went into it. I'm assuming that they probably all played live together. I don't think there's a whole lot of overdubbing on this.
Right.
You know, tour. I think it's just kind of, they ended and it's like, that was a good take. Let's roll with that. Like, we don't need to worry about it. Cause I always feel awkward with just ending on the opening chord, or, you know, ending on the, not the opening chord, the root chord.
Yeah. Like ending on a D would be weird. Like,
yeah, but it just ends, and it's kind of perfect because it's a fleeting thought anyway throughout the song, right? Like the idea of it all, it's just kind of this fleeting tour. It's like, now it's over. It's like, oh,
but I guess that's the thing along. Is you could have ended literally on that. Right. Yeah. But to get to tease back to the verse and like that same really cool transition with the bass and drums coming in, yeah, and basically like one, I think it's one bar of that. Right. And then it's done from there. That's the part that I find kind of fascinating. And to me, honestly, I think that's a, like, it worked so good the first time, we can't not do it again. Like they're linked. Like you have to have that like band kick in again, even if it's going to be for literally like 10 seconds of the track and then they go away.
But that, there's also like taste in that. There's like a tact that I really respect behind it. You know, I just love how I can't find any other synonyms for this. Unassuming, chill, relax,
modest.
That's a mouse. Good one.
I mean, that one sounds bad though.
But mousy.
Yeah, if you will. I hate to say it, I don't think Modest Mouse practices the same restraint.
I don't think so either. This song would have been much larger. God. Isaac Brock would have been like, wait, we're doing a banjo on this?
God bless him. I mean,
oh boy.
All those people that you know. All those people.
I love that. By the way, everybody, go back and listen to how much we heralded and praised Modest Mouse.
I love Modest Mouse.
Yeah, we are big time fans.
The fun, there's two fun vocal exercises you could always do. One is sing every song as Randy Newman.
Or
sing every song as Isaac Brock. Old man, look at my life.
I'm a lot like you.
I'm a lot like
a rough. And he has to do one of the like cowardly lion little rough sounds.
Oh man, look at my life. Oh man, look at my life.
We both have horrible Isaac Brock impressions.
I'm trying to do Randy Newman now. Oh. What am I doing? All right, I think this is a great time to hit up the rest of the Blamley. All right, we're gonna do our.
We're out. We're out. At commercial break.
Oh, we are. Okay, thank God.
DJ Brood is happy to bring you a proper session of music listening at the beginning of every week on Twitch, with rotating themes showcasing new music, hits of the past, and specific genres. There is most definitely something for everyone to enjoy. Tune in every Monday from 5 to 8 p.m. Pacific time as he broadcasts nothing but musical goodness live from the comfort of his home to the comfort of yours. Bedroom Radio, where there are no Monday blues, just Monday vibes. What happens when you get a bunch of obsessive music lovers sitting around a table and talking about every aspect in music? You get the Untitled Mixtape. Join Dango, Lewis, and Lorenzo in this educational but enjoyable podcast that encourages everyone to branch out and expand what they listen to. From deep dives to letting you know what is a bop or flop, the Untitled Mixtape boys are sure to take care of your music needs every Wednesday on your favorite podcast platform. The Untitled Mixtape, a Bassblown Entertainment podcast.
Welcome back, everyone.
Very calm. Welcome back, everybody.
This is NPR Colton. I'm always hoping that they'll pick up one of these and be like, we need him.
Out of our two voices,
you have the better radio voice. That's true.
You have the better singing voice.
I don't think that's true. I think you're a great singer.
I think you're a great talk show host.
Yeah, you know what?
Whenever I hear you do it, I just think of that Radiohead song, Talk Show Hosts on Mute.
You know what's so toxic about me? When you said that, I immediately was like, how can I take that as an insult?
Well, what's toxic about me is I just turned it into an insult.
Bro, my bookend?
Mm-hmm.
Ceased bookending.
Oh, the books finally pushed through.
The books, there's been a year-long war for these books to finish pushing the bookend, and the bookend just recently went, no, I'm done. I can't.
That's funny. Directly to my left, too, is my bookshelf, and it's starting to get like I'm cramming books in. That makes me sound smarter than I am.
Can I say, and what's funny is my dissertation is the thing that finally pushed it over. But I have like...
That makes so much sense.
I'm lazy to the point where I'll take a book out and then like rather than trying to like lean over and put it back in, I just put it on top of the stack of books. So currently it's like a game of Jenga. I have more books on top of my row than I do in the row itself.
I have a lot of vertical and a lot of horizontal. It's not a big enough shelf. It's not a big enough shelf.
People, we need sponsors that we can buy bigger bookshelves because we're super Jeez. Smart. We read so many books.
We're just so well read.
God, man. I mean, I own a telescope. Are you kidding me right now?
You do. Do Look you use that telescope? That was part of the outtake.
I use it all the time. Yes. I can't think I'm not using it.
Yeah, dude, you seem to get a really zoomed in look on the corner of your bedroom.
It's a very lovely telescope.
It is a nice looking telescope. Can I ask really quick before we get into our rankings?
Totally.
What's your bookend? Is it like a cool thing or is it just like literally something?
It's actually very cool. My wife, it's one of my, I want to say Christmas gifts. My wife got me. One half actually has a cool little Edison bulb kind of sticking out that I can actually plug in and it will be a lamp.
Oh, nice.
The half is like this really cool woodwork thing. I would pull it out right now, but it would cause the kind of chaos that I just cannot.
Yeah, we don't. I understand trying to clean that up.
Man. So I have a number in my brain. We rate our songs out of 100 for reasons. And
yes,
we don't feel the need to defend them.
Look it up.
I think what's difficult, and you tell me if you think this is true. Since we did these single song episodes, I think we're both choosing songs that we consider either really classically great songs or songs that we know we both have history with where, like, for the most part, we have some different ones. But
yeah,
it's hard for me to rank these and feel like I'm actually thinking through where they stand next to each other. And in fact, I don't remember half the time. And then kind of don't care. I don't know.
95 is just what always pops up. I'm like 95 is setting the threshold. I think
probably I think. For me, rolling like a Rolling Stone. When we did Dylan, I think that broke the 90s for me. I'm sure there have been a few others. I think I have a nice average of 80 going. The thing is, we don't have a Weezer line. When we did discography episodes, we had the 5 out of 10 was the entire discography of Weezer. And it was my guiding star. Yes. I don't have a Weezer line for these songs.
I roughly kind of roll with the 95, but because you know what? We did remember, for anybody who listened to the last episode, I think my idea was whoever suggested it should go first with their rating.
Mm-hmm.
And so I suggested it. I got to take the responsibility here.
Okay.
Because this is not even my favorite song on Harvest.
Yeah.
I kind of got to bring it down a little bit. And I feel eventually, I'm assuming when we reach triple digits on episodes, we will actually do Harvest, the album.
I would love to. Yeah.
That was my only kind of regret when I suggested Old Man.
That's the hard thing for any of these. But I'm before you give your number, I'll just quickly say, yes, I agree. It's not on this record even my favorite, and I don't even think it's in my top two.
I believe on the original 45 of this, the B-side was Needle and the Damage Done, and I adore that song.
Yeah, and that's a song with like emotional weight that really gets you.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'm a simple man, like Heart of Gold.
That was the coin toss. Am I going Heart of Gold or Old Man?
Did the coin get tossed?
No, I never did. I just was like, well, I remember seeing Colton play. Old man.
You just rolled it on home.
I just rolled it on home. That's right. I think I'll go with an 89. on the precipice of a 90, but it's just, the song is just so good. Just a breath of fresh air to it, where it's like, it's not, I just love how unassuming it is. Like, I can't get over it. I can't get over how Modest Mouse it is.
I am a, there's two things happening inside of me right now. One is I'm feeling like this ultra petty, in that my first thought is, Rob can't like this song more than I do. Because I had a number in my brain and it was not 89. And I was like, no, there's no way. And yet, like you, like for this to break 90, I think would be disingenuous. Because, and I also want to make a small claim here for, like, there's something to be said about a song not having these huge ambitions. Mm-hmm. And that also, though, being excellent. Like, and that's partly, I think, how you build an album, right? Like, you, an album with nothing but bangers. And I guess even the idea of like a hit slash banger, whatever you want to call it. I think when I'm listening to a certain album and it just feels like every chorus is an attempt to hit right on some hook to like, to, you know, recreate the alchemy that makes a song this super famous song. Like, that's exhausting. And it also doesn't work. Like, unless you are writing Thriller by Michael Jackson, or like, I don't know, something like of that ilk, it just doesn't work. We're like, and not even on that record, to be honest, does every song hit at the level that the most famous ones do. And so I think there's something to be said about songs having Modest Mouse intentions and having, like,
we might be saying this,
but also like really being profound and important pieces of art. Like, I think they can both exist. I'm and not the artist I'm choosing, but I think this a lot when I listen to like Waxahachie, where there are songs that she does where clearly, right, this is a song that is meant to be a middle of the record song. Like, there's something about
that, I know what you mean.
Yeah, that kind of a song that is kind of thankless and yet it's important, and you can also at times hit to where it like means something a lot more. Losing Something was a middle of the record song for me. I was like an afterthought. I didn't even think about that song.
Yeah, it's like if you take that book out from in between those bookends, all of a sudden there's just not a balance anymore.
Man, we are on it today. I hate to just like, you know what I rank this episode? 100.
100, baby.
That we should do it
out of 1,000.
Yeah, 1,000. This is all to say, the petty side of me won 89.5. How dare
you? There we go.
How dare you try to force my hand? 89. I had an 85 locked and loaded. Like, that just felt right. And then I was like, no.
I was going to guess 85 for you.
But how dare you? Oh, there, man.
But it's still not a 90. So come on, Neil Young.
Neil, buddy. I know I keep mentioning it, and it feels like a random record for me to like harp on a lot, but people, if you haven't heard Prairie Wind, and I mean, I think it's also because that was the record that had just come out when he did that Heart of Gold album, but, or concert album, but man, that record's good. Like, that's a good record. Even his song about Elvis Presley, which shouldn't be good and kind of isn't, is good.
I'm intrigued as to what our opinions are on Elvis. Elvis is a little overrated for me.
Yeah. I don't even know how to feel about him. Maybe
that's fine.
You kind of threw me. I'm like, buddy. I'm like,
that might have been cut. I don't know. I do not know. But it is interesting. You said heart. Like, for me, Neil Young, it is Harvest. That's the Neil Young that I have. I mean, I know songs from other records,
like Rockin' in the Free World. Like, I'm not. Sure. I don't like rock and roll Neil Young.
Yeah,
I think that's the way I would put it. Like, Cosby, Neil Stash, Cosby, Still, Stash, and Stung. You know, those guys.
That's the first concert I ever went to. Was Cosby, Stills, and Nash. No Young. No.
Okay.
I was a little not born.
What if we did like just McGregor and Colton? Like, that was our songwriting duo. Or McGregor and Sailor. That would be the thing.
Yeah. I'm like, why is it my last name? Robert is a boring name. I agree with that.
Matt and Kim. Like, people, come on, name a band.
Yeah. I mean, you guys wouldn't have liked this podcast if it was just McGregor Sailor.
I think it's time for me to tell you what we're doing.
Let's move along.
We have reached the terminus of this thing.
We started off so good.
We did. I got loose, man. Getting that LaCroix. So I am now going to give you some guesses or some hints for our next song episode. We are going to be listening to First Aid Kit's record. And what is it called again?
The Lion's Roar.
The Lion's Roar. We're going to be listening to The Lion's Roar and talking about it for our next
episode. Have you listened to it at all?
I have listened to the first song, the first 2 minutes of the first song.
the titular track?
Man.
He only got 2 minutes into it. Huh? That's interesting.
This is okay. Honestly, this is my literally 2 minutes of this band and that song.
Mm-hmm.
Mid. That's like a quick.
There's a preview, everybody.
And so I doubt that's my takeaway from the whole thing.
We're going to find out.
Highly doubt. I think we'll like it a lot. But... Yeah. Okay, next song. This is, I almost want to give you a genre so you know what field you're working in, but I also feel like giving you the genre will give it away.
Save the genre for maybe after the first or second hit.
Okay, let me give you, how about this? This is weird and kooky. This song technically does not have a title.
Okay. So untitled.
Okay. Man, it repeats one thing a lot. And so I feel like if I give you any version of that, you'll know immediately. Let's see here. The video is very minimalistic.
This is really difficult because there's not much hinting at the song. Please give me genre.
I'll give you the first line of the song.
Okay.
Girl, it's only you.
Milli Vanilli.
Ooh, you know what? Props to you. No. Okay, how about this? I'm not going to give you the genre because you will get it immediately.
I hate when you say that.
We have done this genre before. One artist. And I will go ahead and say that between the two of us, there's probably one other artist we could do with this genre. And it's this one.
Okay.
I'll give you the...
Girl, it's only you, so I think we're doing Motown.
Man, how does it feel to be this lost right now? How does it feel to not know?
Oh, are we doing... Oh, wait, we're doing How Does It Feel?
I don't think either of those got picked up by the mic.
No, it didn't, but D'Angelo.
A long time coming, because we've both circled around D'Angelo, and I think I want to talk to you about Black Messiah because I think we both really love that record. I like Voodoo, but I think Black Messiah is truly good. And also, R.I.P. to D'Angelo.
Yeah, I love it.
We've not gotten to talk about him. So
it's a very minimalistic music video.
Very minimal. I didn't know how else to put it. Again, there were things about this song and the video that if I just tell you, you're like, oh, yes, of course.
A six pack. A V.
Oh, you know what? That would have been way better. Untitled, for the record, everybody, in parentheses, How Does It Feel? With no question mark, which really bothers me. By D'Angelo.
Here we go again. Yeah.
In the year 2000. That is our song.
That's a good song. That's a good choice. I'd love it.
He's one of those guys where... I'm giving a very small taste of this. When I first was aware of that song and him, mm-hmm. I think because so much of what was on MTV at the time, R&B wise and just pop and R&B was so manufactured and so corporate that as a child, my first thought was this is just one of many kind of manufactured singers that are just having all these things kind of composed behind them.
Yeah.
And it's weird that getting older, I've had a come to Jesus very much in the mode of D'Angelo. Oh no, D'Angelo's
come to the Messiah.
He's a bona fide dude. He was so cool.
I never would have gotten the impression when watching that music video and listening. I liked the song, but I never would have, the idea of what Black Messiah, that album sounds like, would have never crossed my mind based off of that single.
Yeah. Just virtuoso.
Yeah.
Crazy guy. So I'm very excited about this, everybody.
Yeah.
And good episode, man.
It was fun. I hope everybody had a good time. Next episode 77. We're we're chugging along. We're getting closer.
Can you just
closer.
Remember all the numbers?
We're getting closer and closer to our Creed episode.
I promise you, everybody, that next episode, I will drag Rob back down into the doldrums.
My white sneakers have a whole bunch of mud on
it. Is it the sneakers right now? Is that the thing? Let me see.
You know,
please, let me see.
God, dude, I...
Wow. Are you okay?
Yeah, I have to lift my legs a little high for that. Sorry, everybody.
I just saw Rob try to lift his legs, like, maybe above waist level, and I feel so bad. Are you all right?
I probably pulled something. I'll let you know when I stand up.
Okay, old man.
You know, take a look at my life.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.
Take care.